And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3776 of the Survival Podcast as we're kind of on the final turns of the corner heading into 2026. Just a quick reminder, every year, the week of Christmas at some point, old Santa Jack, well, he shuts down for the year. This year, the way that's going to look is as follows. We will have a show Monday next week on the 22nd, typical show for a Monday. And we are also, remember, putting the AI Solopreneur course on sale that morning at 9 a.m. Central. If you want a chance to get into that course, you need to make sure you've filled out the registration form, and you should get some reminder emails this week and going through the weekend that it's going to happen. And on Monday morning, about 15 minutes before it actually goes on sale, we'll send out an email with a link. There'll be a counter on that screen. It'll count down. When it hits zero, it's a race. First 100 to get in, get in. If you don't get into the course that time, you got to wait till the next round. It will be sometime in March of 2026. So if you want in, get in. The 23rd, which is one day before Christmas Eve, I'm calling it. Santa's going to take off for Christmas, right? Santa Jack, that's what the SC stands for. Some people think that's Santa Claus. That's actually the Spirico Clause is what that is. Spirico Clause, right? Anyway, on 23rd, we'll run the Christmas special that we have run every year since year one in 2008. So this will be the 17th time that show has run. And then I will be gone. No show on Christmas Eve, and we will not be coming back until, what will it be? Well, we're not coming back until the 5th of January. I'm not going to come back on Thursday, January the 1st, and do one show. So we'll be gone for quite a while. I always encourage people to do that as well. So that's what's coming. We've got tomorrow's Expert Council show. One more show, we're done for the year. So if you dig the Santa Jack beard, right, Spiracle Claus beard, you guys get your fill of it, because otherwise you have to go watch old videos, because this is going to be gone in January when I come back. We did it for fun this year. It's been amusing. It's been fun, but it makes me look a hell of a lot damn older than I am. That's all I can say about it. Though I did notice something really weird, like when we traveled. Like, usually, I'm kind of a big dude, and, like, a lot of times if there's, like, women, especially women with kids or something, and, like, you get on an elevator with them or something like that, they're kind of, like, standoffish and a little bit like, is this guy okay? And then, you know, when you look like this for some reason, they're all friendly and, like, oh, well, he looks like Santa. He couldn't possibly be a problem. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it certainly made things a little bit easier on me. I hate when people seem to feel, like, intimidated by me or something. I don't get why they do, but for some reason they do. Anyway, what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about spring seed. We're starting seeds for your plants for the spring. I do this every year because, you know, I'm going to bet way more than 50% of this audience has a garden of some level, either in their backyard, on a porch, on their farm, whatever it is, from the full-on urbanite to the person that's way out in the sticks, more than half of you guys garden. And that means that every spring, you're probably putting out things that are very typical. Peppers, tomatoes, eggplant, cucumbers, the common fruits and vegetables that everybody grows. And a lot of that stuff doesn't really work in most grow zones in the United States if you go out into your garden and put a seed in the ground. You don't get a long enough growing season that way, and you either get no production or a hell of a lot less production than you should. And even with people like us that have this huge long growing season, the problem for us is we have two darts. Like most people somewhere in the United States, other than like South Florida, South Texas, South California, Southern Arizona maybe, Southern Louisiana, very down by the Gulf Coast, have a winter dearth, meaning that you get a point where it freezes. It doesn't matter how late in the year it freezes, everything dies. And so that's kind of your grow time, is between your last frost and your first frost. My growing season technically is like 226 days. I should be able to plant peppers from seed. I should be able to plant anything from seed and get a pretty good harvest. The problem is when you get temperatures consistently over 100 degrees in summer, your production goes down to almost nothing, and your plants just kind of stall. They don't die, but they don't grow much and they don't do much for a few months, at least for a couple months here in our you know, like July, August, the plants are just like, you know what? I'll see you in September, boss. I'll see you in September. So that is an impetus for us to get those plants out as early as possible so we get a good harvest before that stall period in the center. So most people have some need to get their seeds into little pots, six packs, whatever it is, and start growing those seedling plants that you're going to set out and be, you know, 4, 6, 8 weeks ahead of if you put a seed in the ground at that point. Of course, that's after the danger of another frost has passed, hopefully, because every once in a while, Ma Nature's like, hey, here's a curveball. And we're going to talk about some ways to mitigate that as well today. But usually I'm doing this in like February. And a lot of times when I'm doing this, I realize at the time, like, you skipped it, bro. You didn't do it. You didn't talk about it. Now you need to get it done. And you're like, man, half the country should already have their stuff started. And I was like, well, when do we really start seeds? Like, when's an optimum time? And for a lot of the country, it's somewhere between February 1 and February 14. And then for other parts of the country, it's more like February 14 to February 28, depending on, because you don't want your plants to get too big before you go to set them out. They get root bound and things like that. So I thought, well, you know what? That means a lot of people are barely a month away from actually needing to plant these seeds. A month away. That's a month in like 10 days or something like that. But really, that's kind of crazy to think about. Like, a month and a half away from February 2026. Tick tock, tick tock. The clock ticks for us all. And so I thought it would be better this year if I got you guys thinking about this before we even have the Christmas break. Because a lot of you guys do what I do. You build some level of downtime into your holiday season. And yeah, you might have to travel and go to, you know, go see your kids or go see your parents or go see your in-laws or go see your, you know, grandma or whatever it is. And there's a lot of activity, but there also tends to be some just, and that's a great time for planning. I've always talked about that. And then we go into January, and even when we go back to work, kind of if you're a homesteader, all the big stuff is done. The lights get taken down. The Christmas decorations get put away. That was the last big meal for a while till Easter, maybe, with family coming over. So then you have this other lull of January, and it's cold, and you don't want to go out, and you know, your friend tries to talk you into ice fishing. You remember the last time you did that? That sucks, so I'm not going to do that. Or you live down here, it's cold and wet, but there is no ice fishing because it's not quite that cold. And so you end up inside. Well, inside is where you start your seeds. So by having this longer run-up this year, hopefully this is going to help more of you save a lot of money. Because when I started this show, I always said, like, starting your own seeds is a great goal. It's something everybody should eventually get to. But there's no rush. There's no hurry. Just go to the store. You know, your first season or two of gardening, go to the store and buy plants. No shame in it. You can probably do better than they do eventually, but in the beginning, they'll do better than you. And when you start gardening, there's like a whole bunch of skill sets you have to learn. And so adding more skill sets like, you know, making your own potting soil or finding good potting soil, taking care of seedlings, setting up light timers, right? Making sure that the plant gets grown. Like, there's all these other skill sets just within this one broader skill set of planting your own, starting your own plants. So, you know, when I started the show back in 08, you could even go to like Home Depot or Lowe's and like a Bonnie's, you know, 4-inch plant was like $1.80. You know, and then they went up to like 250, 249, 250, somewhere in that range. And I was still like, yeah, you know, it's not that bad. And they went up to about $3. And I'm like, it's getting kind of expensive, but, you know, you used to like start these easy ones and then maybe go buy these. Last year, there were freaking, you know, tomato plant, yes, in a 4-inch pot, but it's maybe 2 inches tall, $6 at like Home Depot and Lowe's. No. Especially if you're going to grow like 10 tomato plants. That's $60. 10 pepper plants. That's $60. That's $120 of pepper and tomato plants. You got to grow a fuck ton of peppers and tomatoes to make your $120 back. Now, there's ways around this without growing your own. I highly recommend that you find small local nurseries to deal with. You get better quality plants. Generally, the people that start those plants, a lot of them do things organically. You can ask if you want to know. But just to compare it, there is a feed store that I use locally here for a lot of stuff. Straw bales I get from them. I do buy some plants from them, though I do start most of my own plants at this point. I get feed when I don't have time to get up to Tony's, which is like 90 miles away where I buy the bulk of my feed. I buy things like range cubes, garden amendments, and all from this place. And they have they're not actually starting the seeds themselves. They have like a local guy, and they sell his plants at all seven of the locations, and it's $1.49 for a plant. And that is a tremendous, like, think about the fact then that you can buy like three of these for the price of one from Home Depot, right? Actually, like more like four. And if you're smart, I'll teach you another hack when you're buying plants. Sometimes you'll see two really healthy plants in that pot. You can get it apart. Don't do this. Don't rip them apart. The easiest way to do it is get yourself a bucket of water and kind of douse the roots in there and just slowly pull, and most of the dirt will fall off and it'll just eventually pull apart, and then gently plant those plants out, or pot them separately and give them a week or two to like reestablish before you set them out, depending on your weather conditions. And now you just doubled what you bought by buying smart and being smart about how you separate them. I've done that with tomatoes. I've done it with peppers. I've done it with eggplants, including ones I've started. A lot of times I started myself, and I'll put three or four seeds in a pot. I don't put mine all in the same hole, though. I kind of spread them out to make this easier. And if I have, let's say, a pot, this is a little advanced troubleshooting here, right? If I have a pot where none of the seeds in that pot germinated, but two of the three of the seeds in this pot germinated, when they're still really, really little, you can usually just kind of take your finger and go around the outside, kind of like you're augering out a tree, and then just kind of slowly pull that out, make a big hole and pop it in. And then that way you're translocating your own plants, right? So there's a lot of ways we can leverage this. My bigger point is, it's gotten freaking expensive. And in some markets, you don't have these little niche nurseries that still sell at a reasonable price. And I don't want to hear about from these suppliers about inflation either, by the way, because no, inflation is not why you have to charge us. They're profiteering on you. When COVID hit, everybody and their mother started a garden and they started profiteering on that surge in demand. Most of those people are not doing it anymore, but they established a new floor in the market and they have not had a come to Jesus moment. And if we stop buying that shit, they'll stop charging $6 for a tomato plant in a pea pot, because that's what they're doing right now. And that's insane. That is so far beyond the cost of production, it makes no sense. And here's the big thing. Never buy the shit from them like that. That should never be started in a pot anyway, like corn. Corn is direct, beans are direct sow. So don't do that. That's just dumb. They get five Silver Queen corn seeds in a 4-inch pot, and they sell it to you for $6. It's not going to grow worth a shit. Don't fall for it. All right, so before we get into it, let's go ahead and remind you guys, especially this time of year when you're doing a lot of shopping and playing Santa yourself, that you can help us out just by doing your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. That's tspaz.com. And I do have an item of the day for you today. Check it out. Do you know what it is? Some of you know what it is because you probably own one because they're cool. Some of you are like, is Jack going to sell us a vape pen? That's not a vape pen. I promise you. It is a flashlight made by Olight. It's the Olight Arcfield Ultra EDC flashlight. I love this light. I absolutely love it. It is made of a very strong aluminum alloy called OAL, which is a proprietary aluminum alloy by Olight. It is incredibly well built. I was just kind of railing on how they're ripping us off with seeds and stuff, and you can still get top quality today. You're just going to pay for it. And these lights are about $120, which is a lot for an EDC light. I mean, you guys know I've recommended a lot of lights that are $30 to $60, and they're great. This is just so much better. It's also on sale today for $90. It's knocked down 25%, so that's a good discount. What it has is on the top of it, there's actually a switch that goes between three modes. Flashlight, okay, you know, flashlight. And then there's also a laser, which I don't know. Can I blind the camera with the laser? There we go. I think I blinded it with the laser. And then ultraviolet, which is kind of fun. if you know what to do with it, and you have all these different options. The light itself on full power, 1400 freaking lumens, which is blinding. Like, don't mess around shining at your buddy's eyes. It goes in bad guy eyes only. I don't know if it's completely incapacitating, but it'll jack you up for a while, that's for sure, as would the laser. The UV is really an interesting thing. Most of us have seen detective movies or TV shows where they go in with a UV light and they find blood or other bodily fluids. I know I say the F word to somebody, try to keep the show at least halfway family friendly. And yeah, that all happens, but blood definitely shows up. So if you're a hunter, you got a deer down at night, yeah, light is good. But you know what's really awesome is when you really have a hard time finding that blood trail, UV. It lights up like a freaking Christmas tree. It also lights up a lot of other things. Some of the things it lights up include things like funguses. Like, so it's kind of a cool thing to walk around your yard with a UV light at night. Maybe this time of year there's not as much activity, but mushrooms and other fungi just glow and luminesce in all sorts of different ways. The green laser has a lot of cool things you can do with it too. Obviously, people that do a lot of presentations, you know, we do our, you know, pointing at the wall or whatever. I'm trying to point at the wall behind me, and this isn't easy with everything being backwards, but, you know, we point at things, right? But I've used it, like, when I had a bunch of trees cut and removed, but I had some trees I didn't want removed. I just wanted them pruned up. I was able to take this little laser, well, not this one, but a different laser pointer, because I just got this a few weeks ago, and point. I want that limb off, but I want it cut right there. Construction sites, working with contractors, all types of things like that. And I've also used laser pointers, like, at night, showing my grandkids where, you know, constellations, stars, and planets are. Because you can't shine a light and hit the moon, or, you know, let alone a star that's light years away. But what you do get is that arcing, you know, lit up laser in the sky with the dust of the atmosphere showing up, and you can do things like that. So just a ton of cool stuff. And I wanted to bring this up at first today instead of long term, because I've been being asked a question by quite a few of you guys. My family won't leave me. I understand. I have the same problem. My family won't leave me alone. They insist on buying me something for Christmas. I don't really need anything. Now you need this. Tell them to buy you this. Go buy it through my link. Send them a link to the link of the link on my site and let them pick you up one of these. This is freaking awesome. I ended up with this light because my best friend in the world, David, we just went on a fishing trip, he and I and J.R. Haley, and he had this light, and he showed it to me, and after I saw it, I was hooked. The last thing I want to say before we get into plants, see the tail on that? For those on the video, that is a magnetic charge connector. There's no hole. There's nothing to get water in, nothing to get debris in, nothing to get shit in. So you've got a very protected light as far as its internal workings. And nothing will wear out. And then if you're like, well, but like a proprietary charger, it's kind of an industry standard charger at this point. I have a link in the write-up if you want an extra charger or need to replace one. You can buy it from Olight or you can get them third party. And you get like two packs of them for like $12 because it's not a complicated thing to make. Anyway, they're fantastic. Remember, guys, if you look at that. One of my old friends, man. I've known Valerie forever. I met Valerie here in the chat when I first came to Texas in 1993. When I tell you crazy stories about young Jack Spirico, she actually knew young Jack Spirico. And she's an Olight fan. That doesn't surprise me. She was always a sharp gal. Anyway, hey, Val. So let's just kind of get into this topic today about starting your own season, why you want to do it. Again, it's just a very expensive endeavor now to buy plants anymore. Even when I was saying, like, it's kind of okay if you need to, I was mainly talking about for, like, smaller, you know, new gardeners. You're putting in one or two beds. You only have so many plants anyway. Learn the skill of gardening, and then next season or the season after, you know, learn how to start plants. Because even then, you could go to the Home Depot, the Lowe's, whatever, and yeah, they would sell you the $2 tomato plant in little Bonnie's cup, 4-inch cup. But you could usually buy smaller plants and buy like a six pack for like $3. Now, if everybody still did that, I might buy a hell of a lot more plants than I do. Because so just, I don't know. They're like, hey, you know what? When we sell this, this is a good deal. And people know it's a good deal. So they buy this instead of that. We're cannibalizing it. So let's not do that anymore. So they just don't do it anymore. And even a lot of smaller nurseries have stopped doing six packs. Because they're very space efficient And that allows the grower to sell at a reasonable profit. Because if you can make, you sell a six pack for $2 and you make $1.50 off of it, which is totally doable. That's a great profit and it's a great service. There's enough margin for the but they don't want to do it. They want to milk you. So we want to stop being milked. So we need to get set up to do this. The reason I've always said don't be afraid to buy things, you know, like plants, is because there is some work to setting this up. Every year I get people that, you know, they set some pots in a window in their kitchen. And sometimes this works. If you have really great solar exposure, that can work, but you only have so much space to work with. But usually they get these really leggy, unhappy seedlings because it's just like crawling to the window and it's not getting enough light. And we'll talk more about that with troubleshooting. What you really need to do this right is you either in some climates or situations, a good greenhouse, and then the sun is your light source. But even in those situations, a lot of times it's better to use some artificial light anyway, because your day length is so much shorter in January and February, even March, when you're doing this. So you probably want pots, you want trays, you want potting soil, you want lights. That's a lot to get set up. That's why I'm doing this show right now, because it's a lot to do. And now you have the time to figure out what you want to do it. But how do we figure out, like, what do we buy and how much of it? Because I'm going to be honest with you guys. I am not I don't shop for sport. I'm like, I'm bored. Let me see what I can buy on Amazon, or I'm bored. Let's go to the store or whatever. Like, I'm not that guy. But when I do know I'm buying something, I tend to buy a lot of it. So I'm going to buy some seeds. Instead of buying a little pack, I have like a quarter pound. I have enough seeds for a farm, right? So we don't want that to happen to us. We don't want to go out and make a setup to start 1,000 plants when we're going to start 50 plants. And 50 plants are about as many as a lot of you guys need to start, especially if you're listening to this to get started. That's a pretty big jump from 0 to 50 or 0 to 100 plants, which you can do in a single shelf of a growing rack. Right? It's one shelf, 4 foot by 2 foot shelf, easy 100 plants. If you're doing six packs, you can do, let's see, 70, 144, 288. And the bigger six packs, by the way, right? We could do a lot of stuff depending on how big we want the final product to be. So we need to, and Rachel's asking the question, right? I'm going to answer that one now because it's easy to answer and it's quick. Rachel's put the word question all caps. So the question, do you still recommend Barina Lights? I do. And they are going to be linked in the video or the audio notes today as well. And we'll talk about them more in a bit. But that's, if you have a question, ask it that way. And if I see it, I'll start it and we'll hit you at the end. But start off with just plan out. Here's how much space I have. Let's be honest about that. Like, here's how many plants can fit in there. So here's how many plants I would even, if I start all my own plants and do no direct seeding and I can grow, let's say 100 plants, then I'm not going to start 200 plants. You might, we'll get to that in a bit, but 100 plants is my requirement. So as soon as we do that, we can start to figure out, well, like, here's the equipment I'm going to use. Here's the lights I'm going to use. This is what I'm going to use for shelving. This is my heat mats. All the things that make this work better, and then you can work out how much you really need. And I will always tell you to grow more than you need for a variety of reasons. And one of those is you have failures. Okay. I tend to grow about 2x. If I need, you know, 8 tomato plants, I grow 16. That way I can put them all out a bit early if I'm feeling kind of froggy with it, with the last frost date. And if I get burned, I have a backup. And if I don't end up needing them, I just give them away, put them on next door. I say, hey, I've got, you know, a variety of plants, tomatoes, peppers, and eggplants. They're free for the taking. DM me, I'll meet you at my gate and give you whatever you want out of what I have left. First come, first serve. And that makes friendships in the neighborhood, right? But so it gives me that dual redundancy. One, I get to give some away and encourage others. And two, if I have a failure, I have a backup. And it doesn't cost that much more to do that, right? Now, I don't do double everything, but peppers and tomatoes, those are like my two money crops, I guess you'd call them. And so I generally do a 2X on those. So you figure out how much you want and need, and then where are you going to do it? And basically, here's your choices. In your house, which is great because you're going to have good climate control. It's never going to be too hot, never going to be too cold, because you don't want it that way, and you're going to keep the temperature right for yourself. Yeah. Then you've got your garage. Garage is okay. The problem with the garage is seldom is it climate controlled, right? So we don't have the climate controlled garage we do in the house. And so if we live in a really cold climate, we can get freezing temperatures in the garage, knocking our plants in the dirt. We can also get so cold a conditions the plants don't want to grow aggressively enough to meet our timeline. This can be mitigated with things like heat mats, which definitely recommend even with indoors. The thing about the heat mats is when I'm doing indoor starting, I put my plants on them when I'm germinating. Once they germinate, they don't need the heat mats anymore. I just use those to get them through. What you can also do is use some level of thermostat or something like a thermocube that when the temperature in your outbuilding, your garage, whatever, drops to a certain level, the heat mats come on. And when it gets above a certain level, they go off. That's totally up to you how you want to run that. Outdoors, doesn't generally work, right? The problem with outdoors is that the whole reason you're doing it indoors is because outdoors is too cold. However, in a lot of the South, we get really beautiful days and then cold nights. And so if you're, you know, starting 50 plants and you have four trays for 50 plants or three trays for 50 plants, well, then you can set them out and you can bring them back into that window and they're getting good solar exposure and they're getting hardened off a bit. So that can work. Another time this works, not for this time of year, but a lot of times I want to plant things in the garden at like the end of August to middle of September for fall crops. And if I put that seed in the ground in like mid-July or end of July, it's not going to germinate because the soil temperature gets way too hot in the full sun-exposed garden. But like the shady side of my shop, I have a big planting bench, and I get enough filtered sunlight and their stuff can grow, and I'll start those crops outside there. So that is where that fits in. And then greenhouse. You know, if you have a greenhouse, great. If you don't, then it's not an option. But you need to think about, like, just because you're like, well, I have a greenhouse now. You go down and buy a greenhouse kit or whatever, you put it up. You know, I'll put my plants in there and they won't freeze. Yes, they will. Unless you have some sort of supplemental heat, it's attached to another structure, you've built some sort of thermal battery. When you set up your greenhouse, I got a failed destination right now. We pulled it down. So when you set your greenhouse up and you think, okay, now I got it, and then you put your plants in there during the day and it's like 50 degrees or 45 degrees during the day, kind of chilly, but you go in that greenhouse, it's like 85. It's kind of like summertime in there. Your plants are grooving on that. They like that too, okay? However, when the temperature goes down at night, you will maybe maintain a little bit of thermal advantage as the sun drops and as we get into full darkness. But if it is 25 degrees at 6 o'clock in the morning, just the sun's getting ready to come up, it's 25 degrees in the greenhouse too. And everything is going to die. So greenhouses, don't think you can just go buy, again, a greenhouse kit, whether it's at Harbor Freight or something like the pop-up spring houses, or even some really good quality ones or hand-built ones, without some level of either thermal, you know, like earth battery thing going on, or some form of supplemental heat. Active compost piles inside the greenhouse works. I've seen people do things like they build a wood greenhouse, wood back, wood sides, glass front. They put metal louvers along the back for ventilation during the warm part of the year. And then they take and they put like mesh, like a mesh ring for composting up against that metal louver so you're not rotting the wood. They fill it with wet leaves, which slow compost, and maybe two of those on the back of a greenhouse, that heat transfer in keeps the greenhouse from ever going below freezing on the inside. I've seen that. It has to be timely, but that's another option. But that's kind of advanced. So if you could do that, you probably are not really worried about, you know, me telling you how to start your seeds today. You're probably ahead of the game on that. At this point, when it comes to lighting, I do recommend the Barina lights. Again, there's a link in the show notes today. They're fantastic. They are very, very affordable. And when we look at lights, there was kind of this overlap period for a while where you could still get the old style, like tea lighting, the lights that are like for shops and stuff like that. Now even most shop lights are LED. And you should go straight to LED dedicated grow lights at this point. That's what you should do. And Barina is among the best of those grow lights. And I checked today and they're in stock. And I'm looking, I thought I had it already in the show notes and I don't. So give me just a second here. Barina LED six packs. Right now, you can get a six pack of the Barina white light LED grow lights. So these are dedicated grow lights. These are lights better than most of what you could have bought 15 years ago. Like even at top dollar, you can get a six pack of the four footers for $80. So that's, $13-14 a light, $13.33 a light for a 4 foot grow light. Just buy those. And I also have on my site the little pulley that are made by a company called Zazzy that lets you raise and lower the lights. There's a lot of ways to jerry-rig stuff like that up. Those things are also inexpensive. Just buy that because you're going to want to be able to bring your lights down when you're starting your plants very, very close, only a couple inches, 2 to 4 inches above the soil level. And as those plants grow up and get close, you want to keep bringing the lights up. But you want to stay down low. That makes, when you do that, you give that plant all the light it could want and more. You get little honey badger plants. You get plants that are, you know, they grow like a mad dwarf, right? Like one of those little midget guys that's also a bodybuilder. They got that low center of gravity. They're just tough and hard to knock down. That's the kind of plants that you get when you give them that much light. Since they don't need to reach for light, they can establish thick stems and branch and good leaf form. And that plant is, I'd rather have a pepper plant with, you know, 6 inches tall with double the leaf count and a stalk that's double the thickness of a pepper plant that's 12 inches tall with half the leaf count and half the stem size. You feel good because it's big. That's not how this works. When that plant that you've started that way gets into that garden, and once its root system established, and that little thick husky plant, it's going to have a badass root system. When you pull that plant out and like it's a little bit root bound, you have to pull it apart a little bit. You got a healthy plant. When you pull it out and like it just kind of comes out of the dirt and it doesn't come out as a plug, that plant's going to struggle a bit to adapt. So keeping those lights down, but go straight to LEDs. If not Barina, something else. That's an LED dedicated grow light. That's what you need to be using today. If you have old lights and you use them and they work, don't buy new ones just to do it. But when those bulbs are like this bulb needs to replace, you probably buy the new LED light for less than the bulb for the old shop style lights. All right. Next, heat mats. Like heat mats are one of just one of the best things in the world that you can add to your setup, and you don't need to run them all the time. Depending on the situation, you may want to run them later into the growth, but mostly they're for germination. Seeds come from nature with an innate intelligence, and that innate intelligence is so that they will not grow at the wrong time. So When a mother plant drops seed in the wild, and that seed will somewhere along the way hit the ground, it'll probably land in like grass clumps and shit like that, or leaf litter where it's not soil contact, remain relatively dry. Even if it gets rain or snow on it, it dries off relatively quickly. Eventually it'll get into contact with the soil, wet, and that wants to grow. But you can take two seeds from the same lot and put one in soil that's, let's say, 50 degree soil, and one is soil that's 70 degree soil. And maybe the one in 70 degree soil will be germinated in 5 to 7 days. And the one in the 50 degree soil may take 21 to 30 days to germinate. So that is, again, a hardwired innate natural intelligence built into plants they don't want their seed, and we can't anamorphize a plant, right, or plantamorphize a plant, right? They don't think the way that we do. So when I say they don't want, I'm just using an analogy. But a plant does not want to start growing on a warm day in February because then it's going to die, right? It's not going to make it. And GMI, not going to make it, right? So that plant has that built into it. So what we're doing is we're reverse hacking the biological genetic predisposition of the plant. We know the temperature it wants to germinate at, so we provide the temperature, and then we get to start the plant early so we can get that plant into production as early in the year as possible. That's what's going on here. Determining your starting dates. Well, this is actually really easy, and I'm going to bring up a little aid if you're in the video chat or watching the video to see it. And I have, again, links to everything. This is at almanac.com. And it's your first and last frost dates by zip code. That's my zip code right there. I click go, and it'll show me my last spring frost average. Last spring frost is about March 22. My first fall frost is about November 12. I can tell you that we have consistently had a longer growth season than this for about the last 10 years. There was one year in there that was, what we'd call it, aberration. Like we were actually like our last frost was like the 28th of March. And we also had one year and there was a complete aberration. I think we got 2 days below freezing the whole winter. And those were like in January and February that we actually really froze. And we could have put our plants out at the end of February and been fine that year. So what I tend to do when I'm starting my plants is I bet on that date being good. If you don't have that kind of intelligence gathering, right, because I'm at kind of the bottom of my zone, which means I'm almost in one zone south. So I tend to do better than the average of my zone that Almanac's using here. You may be on the other end of that. You should probably be sure that you're not going too early to where you could not hold the plants before you sent them out until 1 week after that date. That's the safe thing. What I generally do is we're coming up into mid-March here, and that mid-March number has stayed the recommendation for 20 years living in Texas, is I'll look at the 10-day forecast. And if I'm a week before that day, even though they say to wait a week after, if I'm a week before that day and on the 10 day, there ain't nothing with a low under 40 degrees and there's nothing kind of going on up in the great north where Canada's drunken weather may ramble down here late in March, I'll put plants out early. I also have that reserve of plants. And that some years gets me a super duper head start where I'm pulling tomatoes and peppers off plants, you know, mid-April, where a lot of people are just putting their plants out at that point. So you can kind of hack that and play with that as you will. But the tool, again, is at almanac.com. Link in the audio notes. There's a link down in the video description there. If you click that after the live is done, maybe about a half hour after the live is done, it'll be on the main site. All the resources will be there. Next, you know, when you're thinking about that, then once you have that date, think about the plants you're starting. And most of the plants that we start indoors will need somewhere between 4 to a maximum of 8 weeks of a jump start. A lot of them, the sweet spot is right around 6 weeks. So then you take the date that you're targeting to put your plants out, and then you count backwards, and that's the day that you set your plants into your starting soils. Some plants you may want to give longer and shorter, and that's up to you. But generally, I get all my plants started in about 1 week. I don't do everything in one day. I start a lot of plants, but about a week. And if you do it that way, you're going to be able to set your plants out a week early if you get the opportunity. You're damn sure going to be able to set them out the week that you're supposed to, and they will not get excessively large if you have to hold them one more week. And just do that by using the Weather Guesser app. That's the best way that I can describe that. Now, I want to tell a little bit about potting soil. I make my own. This is another skill set. You do not have to. That said, because of what I do, and I'm about to tell you how I do it now, I get better results than I have ever gotten buying even top quality potting soil. I'm going to give you a brand that I really recommend if you need to buy it, and you shouldn't not buy it just because Jack makes his own, right? That's just like you. I've told you, go out and buy plants if you need to. Don't feel like you have to start your own plants just because I start my own or your neighbor starts their own or what have you. But I make my potting soil, and the primary base of my potting soil is compost. And it's my compost that I make, my bioreactor style compost. I have a course on this. It teaches you more about soil than, I mean, Billy Bond took Elaine Ingham's $5,000 soils course, and he said he learned more in my $40 compost course of practical use for the average person for $40 than $5,000. It's about a 5.5-hour course. It doesn't just tell you how to make compost. It teaches you why it's the best kind of compost, and you'll just know more about all of this stuff if you take it. It's at homefoodsystems.com is where you can find that course. But you don't need to do it. If you make good compost, you can do the same thing. The only issue with using pure compost to start your seeds in is it gets too heavy. It gets too weighed down. You want something to lighten it and give it more tilth. And you want something to make it equalize moisture a bit. And I like function stacking. So if I can add to that a for long-term fertility aid that sequesters carbon, I'm going to do that too, right? And if I can add something to it that not only does that, but that fertility aid is basically acting like a magnet and holding on to nutrients and becoming a home for microbes, well, I'm going to do that too. You know what we call that? Biochar. So I use about 10 to 20% biochar by volume, not weight, mixed with my compost. So if I were to take, you know, 20 big scoops of compost, like a big feed scoop, 20 into a bin, right? If I want 10% of that in biochar, I'm going to take 2 big scoops of crushed biochar and mix that into my compost. The other thing I'm going to use is about 10% perlite, which would be 1 scoop of perlite. Perlite is a little white, puffed up rock material that floats like styrofoam that when you buy commercial potting soil, it's in there. The truth is that the biochar at 10 to 20%, and I like to go to 20%, totally takes care of the lightening of the soil sufficiently. You don't need the perlite. Perlite's cheap. It's white. When you put white and black together, it's very easy to see the white. So when you do that and you mix it, you know that you don't have an uneven mixture. Like you have all your like biochar over in this area and you didn't get enough in that area. So that white is more about giving you a visual. Plus it also continues to lighten and make lots of airy growth areas. Your roots in young plants, all plants, but especially in young plants want air pockets. They do not want hard, compact soil. They want soft, high tilt soil. Perfect soil. What is perfect soil? Well, I'm not going to get into like the makeups of the silt sand, all that stuff, but just basically it's about 50% material. Okay. 25% moisture and 25% air. So when we add things like little puffed rock and biochar, which is very puffed up as well, we have lots of air pockets, and we also have an amazing amount of moisture retention. Part of why I like the biochar isn't just what it does once it's in the garden and what it does for the young seedling. The biochar either needs to be mixed with that compost 3 weeks before you use it as potting soil, or you need to inoculate it with something like compost tea before you mix it into your compost so that it's not taking nutrient from the plant and allows the plant to take it back. But when we're using that biochar can hold 7 times its weight in water without getting boggy and mucky and anaerobic. It can hold 7x its weight. So if you have an ounce of biochar in a pot, it can hold 7 ounces of water that the pot otherwise would not be able to hold. Either it'd be soupy or it would drain out the bottom. What does that mean? That means when you screw up and you don't check on your plants and your watering system didn't work that day, you don't come back and find dead plants the next day. I had some plants that I was like sacrificial lambs a couple years ago when I first started doing this. I put like 3 tomato plants in solo cups and 3 pepper plants in solo cups. and did that twice. So three here and three there. And I let them die. I put them under the same lights on the same shelf at the same system. And I watered them really good and then said, good luck, bitches. And I came back at 3 days. And the high-quality potting soil from the store without the biochar, in 3 days, the plants really looked bad. The biochar ones looked like they didn't have a problem. On the fourth day, the ones without the biochar were dead. It took 11 days for the biochar ones to look really, really bad and about 12 to 13 for them to just die. That is an extreme amount of extra battery of protection, right? And so I've talked a lot about biochar, but it's one of those things, because I talk about it so much, there's so many layers as to what it can do for you. So that's my potting soil. High quality compost, 20% biochar, 10% perlite. And if you do that, your life will get so easy. And I've got pictures side by side of cuttings rooted into, you know, Fox Farms, which is great. And that's what I recommend that you buy if you're going to buy it. It's very good. And then mine next to it, and the growth is 2x differential, and the leaves are twice as big, and there's twice as many leaves, and the stems are thicker, and the plant's just, it looks like a different species, even though it's the same plant. Same cutting, same genetics. So these are cuttings, not seeds, stuck in. And that's the variance because of the biology and everything else. So it's best case, but, you know, if you don't have it, you don't have it. I often amend my potting soil a bit more. I am a big fan of Dr. Earth fertilizer, specifically 444. It's an organic fertilizer based on bat guano for the nitrogen. And I usually will make a big Rubbermaid tub of potting soil, just like I said, about 20 scoops of compost, 2 biochar, and 1 perlite into that mix. Is that right? 10 scoops. 10 to 1. That's the numbers, right? And then I'll do like 2 or 3 cups of Dr. Earth fertilizer, and I'll mix that in. And that does a lot for the seedlings by their 2nd to 3rd week of growth. It doesn't do much for them early on. Your seed, your young plant in the first week or two of growth should not need much from the soil other than biological associations with mycorrhizal fungi and other beneficial bacteria. Because it's like a mother feeding her child from her breast. That seed has little bits of selenium and iron and all the other things that plant needs to get started in it. Kind of like, you know, you have some animals that literally when they're born, they still have some of the sac on the outside that they're absorbing. Kind of like that. Yeah. So we put that fertilizer in there more for the long-term growth so we don't have to disturb the seedling down the road. I also tend to use rock dust, and I'll use about 2 cups of rock dust in that 10-to-1 mix because that is a great nutrient add. You don't need that for starting your seeds. Here's the way I look at this. Every year when I'm starting my plants, and eventually I go out to all my garden beds and I put 200 plants out, every plug that goes in the ground, I'm also amending my soil in my garden permanently. Rock dust and biochar, I'll be dead. That material will still be doing work for me in my garden. It's that long term. The biochar will be there in 6,000 years. The rock dust, however long it takes the plants to break it down and eat it, but it's a hell of a lot longer than my body's got left on this planet, right? And then I do some adjuncting of fertility with the plants in the cup or the pot that they're growing in. I wait until they just begin to break the soil. And at that point, I'll pull my flats out and I'll take my finger and I go right next to make a little divot. And I'll put about 1/4 teaspoon of mycorrhizal inoculum, which is a soil fungus that has a beneficial association with the roots. That stuff can only go about 48 hours being reactivated before it finds a root or it dies. It can't live in the soil on its own. It can go dormant in the soil. That's how it does it in nature. But once it wakes up and says, I'm ready, and there's none for it to plug into, it'll die. So I want that plant to just be starting to grow when I add it. Not that some of it will live, but it's just more effective that way. I've trialed it side by side. And when I do that, or some time thereafter that, I'll put a pinch of kelp meal just on the top and water that in to my seedlings. That's kind of all I do with them. Again, if you're buying soil, I recommend Fox Farm soil, and I recommend you further amend it with a product also made by Fox Farms called Cavern Culture. And you can look that up, or you can, again, I've got it in the show notes today. I often use a little bit of Cavern Culture with my plants, but when I set them out, and what I'll often do when I set them out, I'll throw another quarter teaspoon of mycorrhizal inoculum in the hole, and I'll put a bit of kelp meal and a bit of the Cavern Culture in the hole when I plant the plant. I'm not going to go deep into that. This is about starting, not setting out, is what we're talking about today, right? So we'll do a show maybe closer to the gardening season about how to properly harden off and set out your plants. For now, we're just doing starting, but I just want to let you know I do that. And then I usually spray my seedlings with compost tea and really compost extract and liquid kelp once they have at least what are called true leaves, two sets of true leaves. So generally most seedlings, I don't know any seedling doesn't do this, but I'm going to say most in case I'm wrong, because somebody would be like, well, actually, right, when that seedling first comes up, the first leaves you see are not true leaves. I don't even remember what they're actually called. And what I mean by that is, like, you get a pepper and it has these kind of two long oblique leaves that don't look anything like a pepper leaf. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. And when you see it, you know it's a pepper seedling. But you know when that plant's mature, it's not going to have leaves that look like that. And then it'll begin to put on more leaves, and it'll put on more typical leaf of the plant. And usually that comes in sets. So you get two, and then you get four, and then you get six, and then you get eight, like that. And when you get that second set of true leaves, that plant is now at a point where it's taken most of the nutrient that it had stored in its seed from its mother plant and used it. And it's now having to draw off the soil. And you have it in this little pot, and you're trying to make everything perfect, but we'll never make everything perfect. And if that plant can get nutrient from those true leaves, it's like IV injection into a human versus giving them, you know, a pill. It's straight into the main vein, right? And so what I'll do is I'll make some compost extract from that same compost. And my course, again, teaches you how to do all this. But basically, I'll take, you know, a bucket and put a handful of compost in it and stir it with a stick, or make my grandson do it, or throw an aerator in there. Now, aerators for making compost tea, where we add some sugar and we do it overnight, they are a different reason I'm doing this. I don't want to sit there with a stick for 10 minutes stirring it. I got other things to do in my life. So I can throw that aerator in there. All I'm trying to do is agitate the water. We're trying to knock microbes off the compost and to free float in the water. We'll then put that into a sprayer. And for this, all we need is a little hand spray bottle, like something that looks like, you know, you can put Windex in it or something. You can buy them dollar store. You can buy them at Home Depot, Lowe's. Any garden center has them. Just a plain Jane pump spray bottle. And I'll spray the plants with that. Once they have at least two sets of true leaves, I'll spray them about once a week. This is like, you don't have to do this. This is the black magic. This is the secret sauce. I'm giving you all the things that I do. I much prefer to water my seedlings from the bottom in some way, so that it's either they're in trays and we can fill the tray, you know, maybe a half an inch deep and let the water wick up. And let that, you know, give the plant time to kind of dry back out, not too dry, but not too wet. And it ebbs and flows with that. A lot of my systems now literally have ebb and flow beds, like as in aquaponics or hydroponics. So the pot sit in there, and then once a day or twice a day, depending on what and where it is, pump kicks on, water comes up to a certain level, and then it drains back out of that tray. That's a gold standard. Then you don't have to worry about forgetting. You should still check every day or every other day, because shit breaks, and make sure your reservoir doesn't get too low, pump doesn't have nothing to pump, all of that good stuff. But that's a lot more equipment. If you're starting 50 plants, you can hand water. You just have to do it every day. And twice a day is better, but keep it, if it looks wet enough at night, don't do it. Don't do it twice a day unless you feel it's really drying out and it needs it. Okay. But the little squeeze bottles like chefs use, or they put like, you know, oil in to put on your Blackstone, or, you know, you set out with like a hot sauce in it or something, or a chef uses to dress a plate. Those squeeze bottles, they're perfect for watering plants, especially in six packs or smaller containers. And if you have like 10, 20 trays, which are your standard plant trays, you pull that out of your rack system where it's easy to get to, it's squirt, 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 and you're done. It's so easy. Again, I don't want to do it with 200-300 plants. But with, you know, 20 to 50 plants, you don't need all the automation. Again, three lights, 4 foot across, 2 foot wide. Most of you guys can start all the plants that need to be started indoors with just that. Lights, pot, potting soil, squeeze bottle, basic amendments. And I want to do some math with you real quick. Let's split the difference with the cheap plants and the expensive plants, you know, $1 to $1.50 a plant to like $6 at Home Depot. So it's called the average cost of buying a plant today, $3. And it's higher than that, sadly, but let's call it $3. 50 plants, $3, $150. And you probably won't buy 50 plants because, you know, the Scrooge miser in you will be like, that's too much, right? All the shit I just said can be had for about $50 to $100. That's the heating pads. That's everything. And except for the amendments, which you can buy so much more than you need for one season, but let's just say you had to buy it every year. The only thing that's really a consumable is soil. And if you're making it yourself, that's not. You can reuse the pots. You can reuse the lights. You can reuse the mats. Right, you can reuse everything. Like labels, everything can be reused. So even like the little plant, like if you use the little plant labels where you stick them in and they're white, you write them on a Sharpie, the end of that season of starting plants, take some isopropyl alcohol and it comes right off. And you can use it again next year. So you're already saving half the money in the first season, and then you're saving all the money or most of the money for decades. It is just so much better than giving people your money who don't respect you. I'm going to tell you that. I don't know if it's Bonnie's. I don't know if it's Lowe's, Home Depot, Walmart. I don't know if it's a distributor. I'm not going to keep, I don't know if it's all of them portioned out. All I'm telling you is when you sell one of those plants for $6, somebody in that supply chain or everybody in that supply chain or some group in that supply chain doesn't respect the customer. I'm all for making money. I don't hate money. I teach people how to make money. I think business is good. I think capitalism is good. But then there's where you're being usurious. And for that price point to happen, you have to have some level of kind of like an antitrust thing going on, right? Like to keep competitors out of these retail distributors. And they don't care that you can go to the small feed store and buy it for less. They know the average idiot that goes to Lowe's thinks that's just what they cost now. And they've gotten away with it, so they're going to keep doing it. And the more we can take business from them, the more we can get back into some kind of decent relationship between supplier and consumer. I believe the purpose of business is to serve the customer. Now, I can't serve you if I don't make a profit. But it's not to extract from you. I should be giving you so much value that when you buy my product, buy my service, you say, shit. Of course I'm going to buy from them because there's so much value here that my time is better spent doing something else than doing this for myself. That's the way I want when somebody buys from me to want to come back and deal with me again. You know, I mean, yeah, we raised the price on the AI course. You know why? Because we charge $300 for it, sells out in 2 minutes, and students in the second week are going, I got 6 more weeks to go and I already got my money out of it. I feel good about charging fair that way, and that allows us to do a better job for the customer. But you're not going to see that course go on sale for $2,000, even if people would pay it. It's not worth it. At that price, you could slog through it on your own and figure out how to recreate it. And I don't believe in taking advantage of people. I just don't think it's right. And I started doing this show every year when those prices started going up, and I committed to doing it every year when COVID hit. And the true extortion began. And again, $5-6 for a tomato plant. I don't give a fuck what inflation is. I don't give a fuck that it's 2025, 2026. It's fucking theft. And you should not pay those fucking people your hard-earned fucking money for that shitty-ass plant that was grown with every chemical under the fucking sun. Don't do it. Find a small producer or learn how to do this for yourself. Off the soapbox. Some troubleshooting I want to give you, because this is what happens. People do it, and then they're like, oh, I guess I just suck. You don't suck. It's a new thing. And you don't know what you don't know. And I can't solve every problem for you, but I can give you kind of your five biggest troubleshooting things that are most common that have simple answers. The first one is slow to low germination. Slow to low germination is almost always temperature. Now, if you've somehow polluted your water or your soil with something that is like an anti-growth agent or something, I guess that could happen. Never happened to me, but I guess it could happen. But if all your seeds are really slow or low in germination and you have different seeds from different packages from different people, then it's probably temperature. You might think, well, it's 70 degrees in the house. Yeah, but what's the temperature of that soil? That soil temperature with evaporation can be 50 degrees. And it's probably not 70 in the house. It's 70 where you stay in the house. But a little corner in the back room that you keep the door shut on, right? It's probably like 65 in there if it's 70 in your bedroom or your living room. Or 68 in your bedroom or your living room. It could be, you know, closer to 60 in that peripheral room or closet you're using. Especially at night when the plant lights are out. So that seed sitting in that cold, wet soil, and its innate intelligence is saying, don't do it! You'll die! Don't do it! A freeze is still kind of possible. Don't do it! Don't germinate yet. So it goes into this very slow roll. Now, if everything friggin' germinates, and one particular, like your one packet of, like, you know, grandma's grape tomatoes or something doesn't germinate, you could have got a bad, shitty batch of low germination seed. But if it's across the board, it's almost always temperature. And if it's like, well, your lettuce germinated, but your tomatoes, peppers, eggplants didn't, it's also temperature. Lettuce will germinate at a much lower temperature. So always check that first. And that's your number one thing. There are also some plants that are just a bitch to get good germination rate in wet, small bits of soil. A very typical one is cilantro. And cilantro, that seed, you see the coriander seed, you know, that you grind up and put in your chili or whatever? That seed is actually like a case, and there's three seeds inside it. And it is a bitch to get to germinate. For some reason, I can look at a seed and make it germinate, except if it's spinach. I get terrible germination from spinach. And I'm going to give you a hack for this. If you have seeds, the seeds themselves are just not germinating for you. Take a paper towel, like maybe two or three layers of it, wet it, and squeeze it till you can't get any more water out of it. And then fold it up into a square that you can fold one more time. Lay the seeds you want to start in it. Lay more than you need. Fold it over. Put it in a Ziploc bag. Ziploc it and label what it is and the date on it. Set a reminder every day to open the bag and look in and check, because this happens very, very quickly. Very quickly. When you open the paper towel, the little tiny white rootlets are sticking out before they get too long, where they get damaged. Put them in, have your pots ready to go when you do this. So if it's 2-3 days later, they're already ready already. Pop them in, your germination will be huge. It'll be huge. Huge, and everybody knows it, right? Right? It'll be huge. And I've done that, and I've had certain things that just have poor germination rates. I've also gotten seed that just doesn't germinate well. It's older seed. It's a batch that, like, they shouldn't have sold you. But if you do that, you can get a 50% germination rate out of it, and seed's cheap that way. When you're talking about starting these type of plants, the seed's super cheap. So that can save a batch of seed, too. That's probably worth for tuning in today. I'm glad somebody else feels that. Amy B. says, spinach is the hardest. I don't get it. Everybody else grows it. I'm glad you have a problem, too, Amy. I don't understand, but it's the thing. So the paper towel trick works. You want that somewhere warm. I'll tell you, I know 90% of you have cable television. And this way you probably won't forget about it, because that cable box is probably somewhere you can see it. Because if you don't set your reminder, what's going to happen is like, oh, shit, I put those seeds in there. You're going to open it up, and the roots are that long, and they're growing into paper towel, and everything is broken, and the plant's starting to grow, and it's white. It's not good. You want it right when that seed starts to grow. Put it on top of the cable box. Cable boxes are warm. They have an exhaust. And usually that spinach that just won't germinate for me, it'll be 2 days before rootlets start popping out. And I will open it up and pick ones that have rootlets and put them in the pots. And like I've planted half my pots and there's no more rootlets. I'll check tomorrow. And that has worked phenomenal with any tough to get to germinate seed for me. That's a hack for even things that you set out in your garden. Like if you can direct sow something, if you do that, your germination will be through the roof. I've done it with golden beets. That's another plant. I don't get it. Beets are supposed to be super easy. They always were in Pennsylvania. I mean, you could just grab the package of beets, tear it open, and throw it at the garden, and there'd be beets at the end of the season all over the place. Here, especially golden beets, they don't want to germinate for me out in the garden. I'll do the towel trick, and I'll put the rootlet sticking out beet seeds in the garden, and I get about 90% of them grow then. Just a simple, simple thing, right? Next is leggy. Leggy is where you're all happy at first because you don't know you're looking at something that's bad. And you put a little tomato seed in there. And you use your cheap-ass light. And it's 6 feet above the plant, or it's 4 feet above the plant, or even 2 feet above the plant. Or it's in your sunny window that actually has like a UV preventive, so it's not letting the light fully in, because that's good for you from a standpoint of like not making your air conditioner bill high. So like it's something like that going on. And you're so happy because it grew so tall, so fast. And then it goes, it just falls over. And it's all sad. You're like, I don't understand. 99% of the time, if it's leggy, it's not getting enough light. It's just not getting enough light. When it grows too fast, too tall, and it has no stockiness to it. So here's what you do. And here's a hack when you're filling your pots to make sure you can do this if you need to, because this happens to everybody, even when you have good lighting sometimes. Sometimes like one pot in one place or something just isn't right, or you didn't hold your pinky the right way when you planted it, or some the universe balanced off. Never really deep, heavy pack your potting soil. You don't want to do that anyway, because again, that plant likes having a little bit of air. But if you do that and then don't quite fill them, when you get a leggy seedling, you can take two fingers and push and compact that soil down a bit and get some more and kind of go around your plant and backfill it and add more light. And that will usually save a seedling that's getting leggy for you. The next is poor color. Poor color is one of those things like, you know, a pepper plant should be bright. A seedling grown like we're talking about, bright green. Like dark, rich green, and it's kind of yellowy green. That can be a lot of things. If the plant has got two, three, four sets of true leaves on it, it's a nutrient deficiency most likely, especially if it started out green and began to yellow or pale. So that means we're going to bring, you know, we need to bring some nutrient to the party. We need to give it a good organic fertilizer minimum MPK, right? Like just some level. We don't need a lot. This is a tiny plant. Doesn't need much. But this is where maybe we mix up a little bit of a liquid organic feed, maybe with some fish meal or something in it, and we use that little squirt bottle and we kind of give extra to that plant. Or we pull back a little bit, put a couple pinches of Dr. Earth around it, put a little soil on top of it, water it in. I like the liquid here or the compost tea, because if we sprinkle a dry fertilizer on the surface, it takes a while before that plant actually gets access to it at the root zone. So that's kind of like a twofold thing. I'll put a pinch of the fertilizer on top and I'll give it a liquid or a foliar feed. Foliar just means we sprayed it. But since I'm spraying about once a week, once we get true leaves on, this almost never happens to me anymore. And that's why I started doing it, because it just eliminated this as a problem. The next problem often can create the last problem, the poor color and the draining color as well. But it might start to do that before you see it. This is where you get mold, slime, things that look like algae, anything like that on the surface of your soil. You get like a green slime or something like that. plant's too wet. That's pretty much the only way it happens. You're overwatering. Stop doing that. So if you have the poor color, make sure you're not in the early stages of cultivating mold, slime, algae, etc. And so look at your soil really close. And if that's going on, if you pick your thing up and it feels heavy for size and it's dripping water, you may not need to worry about fertilization at all. You may just need to cut back on your moisture. Okay. And then there's one last problem that is very common, and it's not actually a problem. It just becomes a problem. And that is that you did everything so well that even though you counted back from your set out date or whatever, your plants are outgrowing your starting system. They're just getting too big. And you look at your Weather Guesser app, right? And the Weather Guesser says, 5 days from now, it's going to be 24 freaking degrees. And you're like, well, I can't put it out. And I can't keep it here. Okay, so you may be able to keep it in the pot that it's in. As long as it's not a really small pot, it could probably handle another week. What might happen, though, is wherever you got your light set up and everything, well, that might get to where the plants are just too crowded against each other, and you start having problems. They get up into the lights. They start breaking or what have you. So in that situation, what you want to do is take them out, and if you can't give them any more space in your system, then use that kind of – by that point of the year, you're probably going to be in a point where at least your days are temperate. Just take the plants outside during the day, put them somewhere sheltered, and bring them in at night. And if you're going to have – you know, those plants are established now. We're not trying to start them. If you have like a attached garage to your house and you heat your house, it's probably not going to freeze in there even if it gets down in the mid-20s, especially if like you're having days in the 60s or 50s. And then your nights are slowly dipping down below freezing and then coming back up as soon as you'll be fine in there then. Or you can throw your heat mats in your garage and plug them in when you set your plants, but you're going to have to take them in and out. And all you're doing is buying time until you get past that late freeze. And once you're past that, then you can harden off and plant your plants. Again, I'm not going to talk about hardening off and setting out today because this is a monster topic in of itself. But my final thoughts on this is you owe yourself to do this. All right, you owe it to yourself to do this. Get the good lights. Get the heat mats. I'll be bringing this stuff to you. When we come back in January, like there's links for everything today in the show notes. You don't have to worry about that much. I'll be doing them as items today as we build up to that. You got a month ahead of you easy right now after the holiday. No one needs to be starting their seeds like on January 20th. So we are going to have plenty of time to bring this stuff to you. And what I mean by you owe it to yourself is if you are a serious gardener, if you actually grow a significant amount of food for yourself in your garden, and you're doing that as a strategy to reduce your budgetary costs of outgoing and you want to eat a better quality food for less money, that is a noble thing. If you're spending $160, $250 a year on plants, you're starting out deep in the hole. Now, honestly, if I couldn't grow a couple $1,000 minimum worth of food for myself every year, I probably wouldn't do it. I mean, if I was going to only save $200, I probably wouldn't do it. I would go to Central Market or Whole Foods and buy organic. If that's all I was, but that's not all I save, right? Go price organic, I mean, and high quality, right? Organic peppers, tomatoes, greens, beans, all of it. And I don't even eat as much vegetation as a lot of you guys do because I don't really eat potatoes or corn and things like that. When I say beans, I'm talking like green beans. I'm not talking about dry beans or what have you. I do grow some sweet potato every year, but that's a minor component of what I do, though it might be a pretty big component for something I won't get into you today going into next year. I grow a lot of ginger. Go price that. Now, you don't start ginger the way that we're talking about this, but you sort of kind of do. Maybe I'll talk about growing some unusual stuff when I come back, maybe like ginger and sweet potato and some stuff like that, turmeric. Herbs, price herbs, right? Amy's right when she says herbs. Holy crap. Go price a little jar of oregano and then figure out what you're paying by the pound. And your ribeye won't seem so expensive after that. And so by doing this, you could save a lot of money, but you know, a couple hundred bucks more every year. Let's do it over 10 years, $2,000. We'll make it real for you. I know you're going to get, can you say biochar? And I'd be like, he's got to say Bitcoin. What if over the last 10 years, you save $2,000 on your annual food bill and you put every penny of it in Bitcoin? You probably wouldn't be listening to me right now because you'd be out shopping for real estate or something. So all the things that we teach you, or I'd say even $200 extra a year added to your investments over 10 years. That's $2,000 DCA'd over 10 years. That can change your retirement if you're young, right? And the thing is, I try to teach you these things, and it's $200 here, it's $100 there, it's $50 there, it's $1,000 there. In all these walks of life, you find these little carve-outs where you economically improve your position. And when you do that, instead of having a piss away the money party, right, you take that money and say, this is money I was going to spend. Now I don't have to spend it. Then it's going to become my monetary slave, just like the richest man in Babylon teaches. I'm going to take this $200 this year that I would have bought plants with, but I started my own plants. And so I'm going to take this $200 and I'm going to lock it in a cage somewhere in a stock or an ETF or Bitcoin or silver or gold, or I'm going to invest it in other tools that give me a return on my homestead. That mindset changes everything. It really does. Let's see. I think I've got some questions and some super chats here. This is a long one. Sheena Fear. Question, Jack. Have you looked into a method of winter sowing? From what I understand, it works for almost all plants except tropical plants. I live in Central California, San Joaquin Valley, Zone 9B. I'm not sure if it gets cold enough for winter sowing. Any inputs would be appreciated. Okay. So I've not done it. I have heard of it. And it's one of those things that I think wouldn't take much effort to test. And what she's talking about, folks, is basically you put out tomato seeds and pepper seeds or whatever you're going to grow now. And you let that innate intelligence tell the plant not to sprout. And it will sprout at the proper time. And you overseed. So where you would put one seed, you put five or six. And if you get more than you want, you just thin them out. Part of why I don't do that, and part of why I haven't tested it yet, is I get great results the way I'm going. I have full control the way I'm going. But the bigger thing is I'm a cover cropper. So that's one of my other courses that's available at Home Food Systems, how to cover crop. Right now, my garden beds have 12-inch high cover crop. It is a mix of like barley and wheat and oat, along with vetch, winter pea, daikon radish, and I want to say something else, but it's not coming to me right now. So if I sow into that, it has a high propensity that all that biological activity may actually encourage the growth of that winter sown seed to actually germinate early. I also live in a climate where, like, it was 28 degrees yesterday at 10 o'clock in the morning. I know. I used to live in Pennsylvania. I know when you're up north, you're like, that ain't cold, boy. I understand what you're saying. But it was 28 degrees. You understand me. It was 28 degrees at 10 o'clock in the morning. On Saturday, it's going to be 78 degrees at about noon. You see the problem? I can, out of nowhere, in February, get a week with temperatures in the high 70s. And then the next, like, 3 weeks into February, hey, if it was that warm, it'll only get warmer. Nope, wrong. And a front will come in from our friends up north. Your drunk-ass weather will stumble down here. And we'll get a week where we might barely get above freezing at all. And so we get this yo-yo effect. We don't have a stable temperature zone. So I don't know how well it would work for me. I totally think that other people should try it because all you have to lose is a little bit of seed. Amy B. says, beard is strong, but I'm ready for January, Jack. Have you ever tried making duck biltong? That's an interesting change-up pitch. Talk about his beard and then ask about something like, no, I have not tried duck biltong. I have made basically like duck pastrami or duck bacon, but I've not made duck biltong. I do have that duck that's annoying. No, she's good. She's gonna make it. I would definitely say it's probably worth trying. I don't see any reason you couldn't do it because I've done duck prosciutto. I said pastrami. No, not pastrami. Duck prosciutto and duck bacon. And so if you can do that, then you can certainly do duck biltong. I don't know about the timeline on the preservation there. We usually make biltong from a ruminant meat, a red ruminant meat. And they're like, you can just totally eat that raw to begin with, as long as it's properly handled, right? I don't know enough about the chemistry and the biology there to know if it's completely safe. But my gut is, if I can do prosciutto, I can do biltong. And then the other side of that is, other than adding some coriander and a little more black pepper, would it really be that much different? It may not. So maybe I have, and I just didn't realize that's what I was doing, and it was just a flavoring variance. Hohenstein 41 says, thank you and Merry Christmas. Well, thank you and very Merry Christmas as well, with a $9.99 super chat. So thank you so much for that, man. I appreciate it. And Jesse C says, or Roku boxes or internet boxes. He's talking about my hack for germinating seeds, paper towel, plastic bag labeled, set on the cable box. Anywhere warm, as long as it's not too warm. You know, anywhere warm, as long as it's not too warm. Like if you have like a space heater, maybe don't set it on top of it. Maybe like if there's a shelf near it or something like that. The big thing with the seed starting hack with the paper towels and all that, please, I'm telling you, it's one of those ask me how I know things. A daily annoying reminder. A daily annoying reminder. Maybe two a day. In case the first one you kill it and I'll go do it in 5 minutes and you forget. I'm telling you, you go from there's nothing happening to like a 4-inch busted ass root and a weak ass top plant coming out almost overnight. You got to check it daily. But if you do that, it is one of the best hacks ever. And I mean ever. With that, hey, guys, I want to really thank you guys for tuning in today. I want to remind you again about the Olight Arcfield Ultra. God, guys, this light is one of the best damn lights I have ever gotten my hands on. I'm telling you, the ones of you that are telling me, my wife, my in-law, my mom, whatever, will not leave me alone. They're insisting. I understand. I have family like that too. I'm like, listen, I don't want anything. But you have. Now, I don't need anything. If I want something, I already own it. But they won't take no for an answer. So I usually try to give them something like a pair of slippers or something because, you know, $25-$30, and I don't want to spend too much money on me. But if I am buy one of these and it was a family member I knew that it wouldn't hurt for them to buy it, instead of me paying $120 for this, I would have let them do it. It is a great freaking light. And the fact that it kind of looks like a vape pen, and I think it kind of does, if you know what I'm saying. Like, kind of, like, you know, don't let that turn you off. This flat profile, it has a pocket clip, like a liner lock knife. It's exactly how it carries. It carries beautifully because it's flat. And they did something else. And this is something that I think every flashlight maker should do. They have the reverse clip on it where you can put it up on a hat like this and use it either across the top of the bill or you can go underneath depending on how you want your light to function for you, kind of like that as well, for a headlamp so that we can put that on there and we can look. And we don't have to yell at the kid to hold the light when dad's working under the hood. Again, the laser pointer, the UV light, multiple settings, and super bright. And I mean, it is a super bright light. It just one of the better lights that I've actually ever put my hands on, to tell you the truth. It's totally worth checking out. And the fact that it's rechargeable, that's just icing on the cake. Again, magnetic charger, no holes, nothing to fail. And this time of year, if you're doing your online shopping, please try start your online shopping at T-Spaz, because no matter what you buy, you will then help us out. With that, I want to sign off. Again, I'll have the expert, yes, lifetime warranty. Look, Val's back. She's selling it for me. So you can burn your head if you have it underneath, if you have it up too high. That's true. The thing gets kind of warm on the highest setting, and it has a lifetime warranty. Thanks for pointing that out, Val. I should have pointed out it has a lifetime warranty. So I'm telling you, it's going to last. And Olight's saying even if it doesn't, if Jack's wrong, we're going to replace it. So definitely check it out and definitely do your online shopping starting at tspaz.com because you help us out no matter what you buy. Take care, guys. Again, I'll catch you tomorrow with that expert panel show. We'll be back. Actually, wait a minute. Today's Tuesday. I'm getting ahead of myself. Tomorrow's Wednesday. Chef Ken Daniels will be here tomorrow. We're going to be talking about making a great Christmas meal, right? Whether it's a Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, or maybe some of you guys do like a New Year's Day meal, like just a great holiday meal. We're going to leave turkey out because we already did that. Then Thursday expert panel. Then Monday we're going to be doing one more full Just Jack show. And then Christmas special and vacation. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with Chef Ken.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you'll